The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Great to be with you here at the start of another work week. We're glad that you can join us. We had the final showing, at least for this segment of shows, the final showing of Celtic Throne just yesterday afternoon, a loud and raucous crowd of, I think, about 350 people or so. And as per usual, we've got some listener or viewer feedback that we'll be playing right at the end of today's program. I thought it was interesting, just at the start of the second half of the show, we added a little wrinkle to these last few shows by explaining a little bit about the program and the family environment, the family project that this has been. And in the midst of that spiel, Jordan Saranga was telling the audience that this year has been a difficult year and that we just want you to come out and enjoy the show. And there were, I think I was sitting upstairs and someone said, there was a patron that said something similar downstairs as well. They said, amen to that. They're tired of the lockdown and news about COVID-19 and so on. And so those that came out for the show, I think, really did enjoy the production. Coming up on today's program, in the second segment, we'll get into a chapter that we went through last week in the Epistles of Paul class, 1 Corinthians 2, just a really inspiring chapter about the wisdom of this world compared to godly wisdom. Of course, there's quite a contrast between the two, as Paul brings out in that chapter. So we'll go through a few verses from that in our study. Lots to get to on today's program, the first segment here, with respect to the news. A little bit later, we'll talk some about President Trump's swing out west. He had a rally in Carson City, Nevada, just yesterday. While there, he attended a church service at the International Church of Las Vegas. He said to the congregants there, "I love going to churches." And he was even spotted on camera pulling a little bit of cash out of his back pocket to give to the church. So I thought that was kind of humorous, the fact that he's carrying a wad of cash. I guess it's not too surprising, but he is the president of the United States, and he's got a little bit of cash in his back pocket to make a friendly donation to a church out west. He also, by the way, spent some time in Southern California for a private fundraiser. We've got some footage of the motorcade as well. Just lots of crowds everywhere that he goes. And this is California. I mean, this is a deep, dark blue state. And yet you look at the crowds outside to just catch a glimpse of the motorcade. Pretty amazing. So we'll come to that in just a little bit. But first, I want to bring to your attention an incident just a horrific act of violence in France last week. There was a school teacher in Paris named Samuel Paty, I guess is how you say his last name. And he's giving this lecture showing pictures of Muhammad. And he was showing these pictures in class. He was giving a lecture, by the way, on free speech. And not surprisingly, the lecture sparked outrage within the Muslim community across Europe. And so on Friday, this radical Islamist beheaded Mr. Paty in broad daylight. Just cut his head off for showing a picture of Muhammad. Now, the reaction to this, you've got the outrage in the Muslim community, but then you look at the reaction all across France. President Emmanuel Macron, he said the attack, well, he called it an Islamist terrorist attack. He did not sugarcoat it in any way, and he said that this was an attack on freedom of expression. And then people just turned out by the thousands all across France, Paris, other big cities in France as well. A massive anti-Muslim protest across France. And this comes after a time when France has already enacted a lot of pretty tough anti-Islam laws. And I think what's especially significant here is to see just how the tide is turning in Europe, this anti-Islam sentiment. It was not that long ago when you had administrations, well, similar to Barack Obama's, I guess, where they just, well, they didn't even want to talk about Islam in any kind of a negative light. And it was the same. It was the same all across Europe. But when you think about just what's happened, Macron is, I guess he's more of a moderate leader, or he's seen as such. But he came out pretty strong over the weekend. Here's what The Spectator wrote. That Macron even gave an anti-Islamism speech was itself a sign of how fast the debate is moving in France. Spectator says, 5 years ago, when Fox News referred to no-go zones in Paris, the city's mayor threatened to sue. They were threatening to sue Fox News just 5 years ago for talking about these no-go zones. It says, now we have an avowed centrist like Macron warning that the final goal of the ideology of Islamism is to take complete control of society. So here's the centrist leader, and then tens of thousands of people in France taking to the streets in protest. Oh, and never mind COVID-19, by the way. Never mind social distancing. Look at these crowds. Tens of thousands just squeezing close together because, well, this is important. It's important that we speak up for free speech. This world, you think about the prophesied clash, Daniel 11. Look at how much is happening. Going back to the comment that was made even at the performance yesterday. I know this has been a difficult year. This has been a crazy year. And we want you to come out and just enjoy this beautiful program, this beautiful performance, this uplifting and inspiring performance. It's easy to get lost in the politics of America right now. We're just 2 weeks away from the presidential election. But look at the dramatic and rapid fire changes that we're seeing all across the world. It's never going to be the same. It's never going to go back. And now you have this anti-Islamism, and it's rising rapidly all across Europe. One picture of Muhammad, and here's this teacher beheaded in broad daylight. And, of course, just ordinary citizens in France, outraged that something like this could happen in a Western democracy. You can feel it building toward this clash. Daniel 11 and verse 40. A Christian Europe or a Catholic-dominated Europe against radical Islam headed up by Iran in the Middle East. That's prophesied in our Bible. It's prophesied in the pages of your Bible. There was a German article titled, What New World Order? The Case for a Stronger Germany. Here's yet another German article calling for the revival of the Holy Roman Empire. That's what we need. We see America in decline, says this article. What do we need to replace it? What needs to fill the vacuum? Well, of course, it needs to be the revived Holy Roman Empire. The article says here, a new world order is sorely needed in Germany, which flourished under the Pax Americana and against all expectations became a late-blooming 20th century success story, in large part because of America, by the way. It says here, whether it will have a chance to draw on this experience is, to say the least, uncertain. When it comes to security and protection, Germany needs to learn how to stand on its own two feet and make a respectable contribution on the world stage, even if this means a bit of pain, financial cost, and a few disagreements. It says, finally, thanks to Pax Americana, this was not the last word on the subject, but now America has nothing left to offer. This is coming from Europe. This is coming from Germany. It says, and there is nothing in today's world to suggest that something better is on the horizon. Freedom is the recognition of necessity. It's time for the country in the middle of Europe, together with others, to have another go at half hegemony, or to rise and to fill that vacuum, to fill that power void. There's an article also in today's stack by Robert Kaplan, who he's talking about all of these movements like Black Lives Matter in the United States that are condemning all forms of empire, certainly colonialism. And yet, what are we seeing in the world today? Kaplan says we're seeing the rise of empires. The rise of empires. Russia, China, Europe, they're all creating empires. Here's a German publication, as I say, we need the Holy Roman Empire. They're about to get it. Even as the United States and Britain are in rapid decline, there's a temporary resurgence. Certainly the radical left is being exposed. But the greater exposure, as my father has written, is our vulnerability. Look at how divided we are. Lincoln said a house divided cannot stand. It cannot stand. Are we about to experience another uniting of the country like in the days following the Civil War? Well, those were a few painful years as well, as the country tried to come together. But you look at what God used Abraham Lincoln to do almost single-handedly. Here's a president back in the 1860s calling upon the United States, calling upon national repentance. We don't see that today. We certainly have a stronger leader than what we've had in recent decades. There is a temporary resurgence. God had mercy when we didn't deserve it. But where is the national repentance? You don't see it. You just don't see it. There's another article here from War on the Rocks, arguing that the U.S. should build up Europe. So you have Europe, or Germany specifically, calling upon Germany to rise up, to lead the Holy Roman Empire. And then you've got these U.S. commentators saying, look, we need to build up Europe so they can just go it alone. And of course, you know about President Trump's foreign policy. He wants to pull all of the troops home. He wants to get out of Europe. He wants to stand alone. He's heading in that direction. This country, is headed in that direction. This article here says Washington should want the European Union to be a much more prominent and capable actor on the world stage because the U.S. urgently needs strong and able partners as its own strategic attention shifts more and more to the Indo-Pacific. So, I mean, it seems like it makes sense from a trade standpoint and so on. But look at how rapid these prophetic developments are. Prophecy, the pace of it is accelerating. And hopefully you can see it. If you look at the news here in the U.S., as I say, President Trump's swing out west, the fact that we're just a couple weeks away, and then you have all of these scandalous revelations about the Biden family, Hunter Biden's laptop, that he just turned into a computer repair shop a year and a half ago and never picked it up. And here now that laptop is in the hands of the FBI, and you've got others that have copies of the hard drive. And all that's being revealed, the Federalist had an article the other day about why no one is talking about impeachment. And it makes a pretty effective point. Going back to January and February, remember Nancy Pelosi and them saying, impeachment's forever. Impeachment is forever. Even if the Senate doesn't vote to convict, still, he's got that permanent stain on his record. And we're going to be bringing it up over and over and over again, right up until the November 3rd re-election or the November 3rd presidential election. And as the Federalist brings out, you haven't been hearing the Democrats talk about impeachment, have you? They haven't brought it up. Why? What's the reason? Well, listen to this from the Federalist. It says the basis for the impeachment, for those whose recollections are understandably shaky, was that President Trump pressured the president of Ukraine to launch investigations into the energy company Burisma for the purely political purpose of hurting Joe Biden. Central to that allegation was the argument that Trump and the United States had no legitimate interest in seeing Burisma investigated. It says, if the trove of emails from Hunter Biden's laptop are accurate and they have not been disputed, then this argument falls to pieces. You go back to why the president was impeached in the first place. He was calling for Burisma and the Bidens to be investigated. And Democrats screamed, saying, well, that's politically motivated. And now you look at all those emails. Emails between Hunter Biden and board members of Burisma. And the fact that they were meeting with Joe Biden, then vice president. And the fact that Joe Biden went into Ukraine and insisted that Ukraine prosecutor get fired. Remember what he said? Oh, I was there 6 hours. I said, you're not getting the billion. Well, you don't have the authority. It's Barack Obama. And what did Biden say, by the way? He said, go call him. Go call Obama, which makes you wonder, how much did Barack Obama know about all of this pay-for-play that was going on in Kazakhstan, in Ukraine, in China, in Russia? How many people were on the take? Even in the emails themselves, there are indications that there was a cut for Pop, for the dad, for the leader of the family. That would be Joe Biden. And now you wonder, well, when are we going to have some revelations about the Obama family? And you know all about Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation and what they were up to when she was Secretary of State. They're quite good at this, a lot of them. Pay for play. Well, I mean, we'll give you a favor here and there, but you better make sure you make a nice donation to the foundation. The basis, carrying on in this Federalist piece, it says, and here we are, if these emails are accurate, then it is as clear as is the summer sun that Hunter Biden was absolutely selling access to his father and the Obama administration in exchange for his lavish salary, tens of millions of dollars, $83,000 a month from Burisma, millions of dollars coming in from China, Russia, $3.5 million wire transfer from the wife of the former Moscow mayor, Russia, China. I think the way the media reacted to this last week, the cover-up, and then the censorship coming from big tech. They know how damaging this story really and truly is. They know that Joe Biden is in trouble. All of this damning evidence. So what's their approach? Just blot it out. Don't even bring it up. If there's a town hall with Joe Biden for 90 minutes, don't even ask a question. Just cover it up. And then Joe Biden gets asked about it, and he angrily responds and says, it's just a smear campaign. That's like you to bring this up. You can't even ask the question. I thought this was interesting yesterday. This didn't have to do with the laptop necessarily, but you see the same spirit. This is Laura Trump. She's the daughter-in-law of the president, and she's on with Jake Tapper at CNN. And once she brings up something that Tapper doesn't like, what happens? Shut it down. Get her off the air. Mock her. Ridicule her. Cut her mic. Do whatever you have to just don't even let her bring it up. Here's clip six.
I think what we see on stage with Joe Biden, Jake, is very clearly a cognitive decline.
Okay.
That's what I'm referring to. It makes me uncomfortable.
You are so amazing. It's so amazing to me
and try and figure out an answer.
A cognitive decline.
Well, you're trying to tell me that what I was suggesting was a stuttering.
I think that you were mocking his stutter.
I
think you have absolutely no standing to diagnose somebody's cognitive decline. I would think that somebody in the Trump family would be more sensitive to people who do not have medical licenses diagnosing politicians from afar. Plenty of people have diagnosed your father from afar.
Yeah, and there's no problem with that. You talk about President Trump being crazy or in decline mentally all you want. But don't dare bring it up about Joe Biden. Don't even bring it up. She brings it up and he's okay, that's enough. That's enough. We're going to shut this down. It's the same spirit. We saw it last week. Just don't even report on it. Just call the New York Post a tabloid. Call it a smear campaign. But what about the exchange? What about the email? What about what's in the emails? What about the actual evidence? President Trump, when he was in Carson City yesterday, he talked about this revelation of Hunter Biden, the Biden family, the laptop, and all that it revealed. And here's what he said, clip three.
So they find this horrible, horrible laptop of Hunter. Where's Hunter? Where's Hunter? But Joe is far more corrupt than Hunter, because Joe knew everything. Joe's getting a piece of everything. They have it in the email, 10% and 50%. But Joe is far more corrupt than Hunter. But what happens is they say, where's Hunter? And they see what's going on. Everybody's looking for him. Everybody wants to find. And all we're hearing is that you can't talk about this kind of thing. You can't talk. Can you imagine if that were Don Trump Jr.'s laptop? Or Eric Trump, who's such a fun... These are good kids, but they have just been brutalized by these maniacs.
That's President Trump yesterday in Las Vegas. All of these revelations, and you just can't talk about it. And as he rightly points out, if the roles were reversed, that's all that they would be talking about. The laptop. They don't care how it... Now they're concerned about the process. Now they're concerned about leaks all of a sudden. Now they're concerned about how this was revealed. Now they're adding that it's Russian disinformation even, as I covered last week. Before, process didn't matter. Illegal leaks, felonies, whatever. I mean, once it's out there, we've got to address the dossier and all of the allegations in that document. And none of those were true, but that's okay. Spread it. Spread it as far as it'll go. Keep an investigation going on 3-4 years. Just keep it going on for years and years and years. That's no problem. What a difference when you look at the way they're approaching this. This is from Breitbart on Friday. An advisor to the Ukrainian energy company Burisma suggested in an email in 2015 that Hunter Biden was expected to provide deliverables for the company, including the ultimate purpose of stopping cases, pursuits into the company's founder. Well, here's why you're hired. Why did he get hired? Didn't know the language, didn't know anything about energy. He's hired as what? Well, his job is to take care of these cases, these investigations. And did he ever? It says the email contained in a batch of published by Ken LaCourte in the Media Action Network is reportedly from the same laptop that has been the source of recent articles for the New York Post. It says the emails make clear that Biden and his partners were expected to arrange meetings with U.S. and Ukrainian officials with the goal of improving Nikolai's case, that's the head of Burisma, Nikolai's case and his situation in Ukraine. And then it goes on to talk about, well, some of the contents of that email exchange. Pay for play. The president said yesterday this was like a cash machine. for Hunter Biden. The cash just kept rolling in. So long as he'd give out the favors, the meetings with top U.S. officials like his father. And then in the case of that prosecutor, he got fired. That was clearly a quid pro quo and one that they bragged about while the cameras were rolling. Yeah, I came into Ukraine. I said, you get rid of this prosecutor or else you don't get $1 billion of aid. That's right. Right out there in the open. Clear as day. Broad daylight. Here's the president again from his rally yesterday in Nevada. Clip one.
Joe Biden is and always has been a corrupt politician. He always has been. And as far as I'm concerned, the Biden family is a criminal enterprise. It really is. Look at what's going on. It's a criminal. You know, I don't know what's going on with the, you know, the Democrats, a very powerful party, but it's not the Democrats. It's the Democrats plus the fake news media. And then it's also including big tech. Okay? Here it is. It's me. I'm all you have between your Second Amendment and chaos and all the problems. It's me. I'm all you have.
He's standing with the people. And look at what he's going up against. I have another clip where he talks about the swamp. You know, the language he used from 2016 when he was campaigning. And he says, you know, I didn't think it would be this bad. Here's another from Breitbart. It says, newly obtained emails from a Hunter Biden business partner lay out in detail how the vice president's son and his colleagues used their access to the Obama-Biden administration to arrange private meetings for potential foreign clients and investors at the highest levels of the White House. You don't have this authority. Well, go call Barack Obama and see about the authority I have. Go call him. According to that video, which the whole world has seen, Barack Obama was quite all right with this. Biden showing up in Ukraine and saying, you fire that guy or you don't get $1 billion. And I'm right on the same page with President Obama. The highest levels of the White House, it says, these never-before-revealed emails outline how a delegation of Chinese investors and the Communist Party officials managed to secure a private, off-the-books meeting with then-Vice President Joe Biden. See, keep it off the books because, well, we don't want this to be official. It says in a 2011 email, Hunter Biden's business associates also discussed developing relations with what one called China Inc. as part of a new push on soft diplomacy for the Chinese. These emails, it says, are completely unconnected to the Hunter Biden emails being released by the New York Post. So here come more emails. And some of them are coming from former business associates of Hunter Biden's. And listen to this. These are the people that he hung out with. These are the people that he worked with. It says, these and more explosive, never-before-revealed emails were provided to Schweizer by Bevin Cooney, a one-time Hunter Biden and Devin Archer business associate. Cooney is currently in prison, serving a sentence for his involvement in a 2016 bond fraud investment scheme. It's a friend of Hunter's. He's been serving a prison sentence. And it says here, Devin Archer, who was also convicted in the case, saw a federal judge vacate his conviction. But an appellate court overturned the lower court judge's ruling, reinstating Archer's conviction in the case. It says, Archer, Hunter Biden's longtime business partner, awaits sentencing. And you would think the media would say, wow, it sure smells like a scandal of epic proportions here. Instead, it's blotted out. You bring it out. Okay, if that's where you're going, interview is over. Or if I'm the moderator of this town hall, it's not even going to be brought up. We're not even going to let one question get through. This is what the president of the United States is going up against when that that computer shop owner, by the way, handed over the laptop to the FBI. Rudy Giuliani says that, you know, he feared for his life once he saw some of the things on that laptop. And he told the FBI agent that, you know, I'm worried here about my own well-being, my own safety. And according to some reports, according to Rudy Giuliani, this FBI guy said, well, you don't have anything to worry about if you keep your mouth shut, if you just keep quiet. Isn't that amazing? No investigation even coming from the FBI. It's incredible. I read through that article from my father, 2004, the deadly left-wing media. And we were right on this. Spot on, 16 years ago. Everything that this current presidency is going up against, you've got the radical left, these maniacs, as he said in his speech yesterday, and then this deadly left-wing media. As I say, even the president himself is shocked at how bad it really is. Listen to clip 4.
When I said drain the swamp, I didn't know it was this bad. But send them a message that they will never forget. Show them that the American people are still in charge.
2 weeks away. 2 weeks away from the presidential election. And despite all of this that he's going up against, as I said, he heads out west. And the motorcade goes through Southern California. Look at this footage. Clip 5. Look at the motorcade going. Just to get a shot of the president as he was driving by, and he's on his way to a private fundraiser. Everywhere that he goes, you know all about the rallies, tens of thousands of people turning out to see him. These, as the president has said before, these are the opinion polls. Never mind the fake media and what they say about who's way ahead or who's way behind. Look at the crowds. There's something to be said for the crowds. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Do you believe the United States of America has been mainly a positive force in the world for most of its history? Do you believe that America was at one time a great nation? The United States of America was founded on many biblical principles that were incorporated into the Constitution. This lent to its success and positive influence in the world. But the America of then is not the America of today. To anyone examining the current state of America, this should be alarming. It has been a great nation in time past and is experiencing a temporary resurgence in these end times, but it will only be exactly that, temporary. Our free booklet, Great Again, will explain America's status. It will prove that God has been intimately involved in the rise and resurgence of America under President Donald Trump. It will also explain why God is saving America temporarily, how he was doing it, and what is yet to come in America. There is a spiritual dimension to America's rise and decline as a superpower. This free booklet will explain this dimension and how God will soon make America truly great again. Request your free copy of our book, Great Again, at our website, thetrumpet.com.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Last week, as I was saying at the start of the program, we went through chapter 2 of 1 Corinthians. Just trying to get my notes straight here, but we went through chapter 2. This is the Apostle Paul. You know about a little bit about the the congregation at Corinth, which had some struggles, some troubles, and Paul addressed and corrected them for these things in his letter to Corinth. And I covered, I think, more so last week than I did. I just kind of alluded to it today with that 2004 article that my father wrote about the deadly left-wing media. But he makes the point in there that the more you see such hatred of the truth, the more we ought to see just how precious God's truth is. And I was just thinking about that statement as I went into the epistles class and we went through 1 Corinthians 2. Just a powerful, powerful chapter where Paul says here in verse 1, "And I, brethren, when I came to you came not with excellency of speech or of wisdom, declaring unto you the testimony of God, for I determined not to know anything among you save Jesus Christ and him crucified. And I was with you in weakness and in fear and in much trembling." That's 1 Corinthians 2, verses 1 through 3. Paul said that when I came to you, look, there were a lot of trials, tests, tribulations, and so on. But I determined not to speak with excellency of speech or of the wisdom of this world, but to just give you the plain truth, to just tell you the truth and to help you realize how precious it is. That's essentially what he's saying. And verse 4 says, "And my speech and my preaching was not with enticing words of man's wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power." So when I came to you and I taught or conversed, I didn't use the flowery language that's so prevalent among scholars today, or back in Paul's day. He had just come from Athens, by the way. He had his encounters with the scholars of the world. But he says, look, I just wanted to give you the simplicity of God's truth. And you know, if your eyes are open to the truth, if you're discerning, you know that this message, this testimony, this gospel, you know it was backed by power. That's a pretty effective point to make there as well. Spirit and of power. It was a demonstration of the Spirit and of power. That's what we need. That's what sets us apart from all other worldly organizations or institutions. That's what sets us apart from the traditional Christian world, is you have the truth and you have it's backed by power. The power of God. The power of God backed the Apostle Paul, the miracles that he performed, the inspired messages, the inspired letters that he wrote. You can just look at 1 Thessalonians 1 and verse 5 later, where Paul said, "For our gospel came not unto you in word only, but also in power." So the gospel is not just proclaimed in word only. As I was saying to the students last week, there's plenty of people in the world today that can open up this Bible and just give you some quotes, give you some verses from it. And yet look at how many different interpretations there are of the truths contained in the Bible. Look at how many differing opinions there are. Mr. Armstrong would come along and say, look, what I'm going to give to you today, it's straight from the Bible, and you go and prove it. See it for yourself. There was this flight attendant, by the way, on my flight from Salt Lake City to Phoenix a couple weeks ago. She saw that I was reading the Wonderful World Tomorrow book. And she thought that was interesting. It led to a conversation. And by the end of it, she was taking a picture of the cover of that book so that she could look into it later. And when she did that, I immediately thought, well, there's, you know, everybody and their dog on the internet is so critical of Mr. Armstrong. You can see why he has so many critics. Because Satan hates the truth. And look at what we're facing just in the world of news coverage, as I've been discussing. Satan wants to blot it out. So I told this woman, look, if you go online to hunt for that booklet, just know that you need to read the booklet and see what the booklet says. And never mind what some critic says. Never mind what some scholar says. Look into the Bible. Look into it for yourself and see what God has to say. Hopefully she'll do that. Because if she reads it, if she actually studies it, it's going to be a real eye-opener for her. She's looking at this world today. This is an older woman, probably in her 60s, 70s, I don't know. She's still working. She seemed very happy, you know, on the plane and so on. But I'm sure she's like a lot of people that have seen what has happened to their country, especially in these last few years. You would think there'd be even more. Just deeply concerned about what's happening in the world today. Just how fast these prophetic events are unfolding, as I said in the first segment. But here Paul emphasizes the power of God. Verse 5, he continues, that your faith should not stand in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. That's what our faith needs to rest on. Not the wisdom of men, but the power of God. What about God's power? That's the same power that comes into our minds upon baptism, or repentance and faith and baptism and the laying on of hands. And then you receive the power of God, and that power begins to miraculously change our nature to where we begin to think and behave and act like God. It's a process, of course. But look, even in God's church, you look at some of the history with the Worldwide Church of God, you look at what that church went through during the 1970s, you read Raising the Ruins and see what happened right after Mr. Armstrong died, and a lot of those top ministers, too many of them were impressed by worldly wisdom. They were impressed by the wisdom of men, and not so much the power of God. Yet when you look at the work that God did through Mr. Armstrong, Zechariah 4:6, not by human might nor power, but by my spirit, says God. He raised up that end time type of Zerubbabel and did a powerful work through him. He was backed by the power of God. So was the Apostle Paul. And Paul says here, I didn't come by the wisdom of men. And he could have, by the way. I mean, he grew up as a strict Pharisee himself, highly educated, learning at the feet of Gamaliel. He was persecuting Christians, thinking he was doing a service to God. And then God struck him down. God converted him to the truth. The Spirit of God entered into his mind, and then by that point, or from that point on, Paul was led by the Spirit. He was backed by the power of God. Verse 6 says, howbeit we speak wisdom among them that are perfect, or that are spiritually mature is the meaning there, yet not the wisdom of the world, nor of the princes of this world that come to naught. Mr. Armstrong, in 1946, when he was thinking about establishing God's College in support of the work. Ambassador College was established in 1947, as many of you know. But in 1946, here's what he said about what he was thinking. Today, the truth appears as mere foolishness to the highly educated in this world. None but the fool says there is no God. Yet surveys show most college graduates say that there is no God. Mr. Armstrong says, educated fools. That's what they are. The fool. Psalm 14 and verse 1. It's the fool that says there's no God. And here we are, so educated, so sophisticated, and so far removed from God and his truth. As my father said in that left-wing article, when you see what Satan's doing to blot out the truth, or words to that effect, well, it just makes you realize how precious the truth is. Here's what Mr. Armstrong said. This is God's work, and several months ago, God showed me, as if by special revelation, that the time has come to found a college in connection with his work. Where today are young people who wish to dedicate their lives to God to go to find true education? Where do you find this today? How unusual and unique the work of God is, and God's college, God's educational program, When you look at what this little, this, and it is a little educational program. There's not that many people involved in it. And yet, as was explained to those who attended the concert yesterday, here, this glorious display, it's put together basically by a few families, a handful of families living right here in and around Edmond. It's pretty amazing what God can do, even though it starts as a mustard seed, a small beginning and such. Mr. Armstrong says, God showed me the time has come to establish an educational institution based on truth, on God's revelation of truth, supplemented with those facts of natural and exact sciences which man has been able himself to discover, and all based on and explained by and in harmony with the Bible. The Bible, it doesn't contain all knowledge, but it is the foundation. That's the foundation on which you build the entire edifice. The church, it's that spiritual temple. Paul has something to say about that in 1 Corinthians as well. Verse 7, he continues, but we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, even the hidden wisdom which God ordained before the world unto our glory. Paul says, we're speaking in a mystery. The world doesn't understand this. They don't grasp the truth. It's like a secret. So why? Why would God conceal it in that sense? Well, it's just not time. There's a time order to the way God's working out his purpose. I don't have time to get into all the verses, but he's calling out a few. The first fruits harvest, spiritual Israel, the Israel of God, Galatians 6:16. To be prepared and trained as the bride of Christ, to assist Christ for all eternity. When the family of God then brings in all of the untold billions and billions of human beings that have lived and died without ever having knowledge of the truth, they'll have their opportunity. But right now, we'll look at verse 8, which none of the princes of this world knew. They didn't know the mystery. Even the princes, even the top leaders. Paul said this. That's pretty straightforward. Did people on a mass scale, did they accept the message, the gospel of Jesus Christ? Did they accept the message, the gospel of the Apostle Paul? He said in 2 Timothy that everyone in Asia, there was a huge work in Asia, in Ephesus and Miletus and all the surrounding areas. Paul was there for 2 years at the school of Tyrannus. He was teaching, instructing. And then you get to the end of his ministry, and it was pretty much, the truth had pretty much been blotted out. Paul says everyone in Asia left, Timothy, everyone. This is what God's church has always encountered. Satan hates the truth. He wants to destroy the truth. And the more and more you see this, the more and more you should appreciate, as my father said in that 2004 article, the more and more you should appreciate just how precious and valuable the truth of God is. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with some feedback from the final showing, at least in this interval, the final showing of Celtic Throne in Armstrong Auditorium yesterday afternoon. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email feedback, send us comments, td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Education is something most people take for granted. We assume it is something one acquires after graduating from a college or university. Yet the 20th century knowledge explosion has done little to solve the problems of this world. Crime, broken families, suicide, disease, mass illiteracy, and poverty. Why, in a world filled with so much advanced material knowledge, are there so many unsolvable problems? Why, after 6,000 years, has mankind been unable to find the solution to its escalating evils or to the number one problem it now faces, that of human survival? Our free booklet, Education with Vision, will show you what is wrong with education today. It will show you what is true education with vision and how to achieve it. Request your free copy of Education with Vision at our website, thetrumpet.com.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Very entertained. They're doing a very nice job. I didn't know exactly what to expect, and I would say I think the performers are doing great. I think the musicians are doing good. It's very entertaining.
I love it all. Yeah, well, I drove here from Stroud to see it, so yeah.
Yeah, awesome.
Well, I tell you what, we like it well enough. I think we're going to buy season tickets next year here.
Oh, I think it's been wonderful. I've enjoyed all of it. My husband's really been excited, too.
It's just outstanding. Outstanding. That's all I can say. That's my year's worth of culture right there.
It's wonderful. I mean, it's a good blend between Celtic, Irish dancing, contemporary ballet, all the... It's really good. I like it.
Well, all the dancing, it was so cool. Amazing.
Very energetic. Just kept the audience engaged and really connected with the dancers. It was just very exciting.
I really enjoyed the coordination between the dancers. I really like how they're all able to stay in sync so well. It's really impressive.
I think it was just awesome in general, especially the tap dancing.
The ballet dancing was actually really good. I really enjoyed it. I'm really impressed.
I think it's been very enjoyable. I enjoy that we're at the top balcony so we can actually see the formation. Generally, we get the closer tickets, and I'm happy that we didn't because they are doing a wonderful job.
I like the Islanders dance. I thought that was pretty good.
I like the one with the lightning. That was my favorite. Dramatic. And I'm dramatic, so.
I absolutely loved it. The strength and poise that all the dancers have. They're so in sync. It's lovely to watch.
They are beautiful. It's amazing how much energy they have, even after they've been dancing for so long, and then they still are able to hit all those high kicks.
The facial expressions that they have make the story so much better to watch. I love the energy that they give.
I wish I could pull my legs up as high as those kids do.
It's been wonderful. We're really enjoying it.
Awesome. It's great.
Absolutely awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
Changed so quickly in like 10 seconds. Yeah. It's amazing.
The last show with the clock was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
The human clock.
Yeah.
Very, very awesome.
Very moving. Emotional.
Yeah, we've really enjoyed it. My kids are riveted, and they're never riveted. So.
I think it's amazing. I've literally been on the edge of my seat ever since I even got in here. I'm like...
Good. I loved it.
I loved it.
I liked it all.
It was amazing.
The kids were really into the parts where people in the audience were clapping. That was what they really got into, and I liked that part too.
Yeah.